All right, you guys want to talk about referral roadmaps? I know, contain your enthusiasm. All right, so Kara, I saw you on Lifestyle. You guys don't obviously have to attend both calls. We're going to talk about those same referral roadmaps. But as we do it, I want to talk you through how, I want to really talk through how you all are managing referrals now and how this sort of syncs with that. So we can sort of talk through the implementation as you go. So again, smaller group, drop in chat, or just open your, open your mute as we go through the conversation. So in terms of referrals, this is, I think, very much to the conversation we were having around SEO. When we talk about growth in September on, we're getting very specific about how to grow from a broader growth strategy to defining targeted marketing campaigns, right, to the specific strategies, to SEO, to blogs, to webinars, to COI campaign. Like, we're getting really nitty gritty. And the thing that we always talk about, because everyone experiences it, is client referrals, right? How to get them. Carl's done a session on, I think he did a mini version of his boot camp for us. So if you like Carl and his approach with referrals, we've got like 4 hours of his client referrals roadmap stuff in the library. But the idea around referrals that 98% of the population misses is what happens after somebody makes one. There are no courses on that. There are no articles written about it. This is, I'm sure someone somewhere is talking about it, but this is, we are the only ones that I know of, and I do not understand why. And it is because when you think about a referral, whether it's from a client or a center of influence, I want you to ask yourself one really powerful question. What is it? What is a referral? It's not a transaction. It's an act of something really valuable. What is it an act of? Kara, you can't cheat. You can't.
Trust. Trust, confidence. Trust.
It is an act of trust. It is, in fact, I would argue, the single biggest act of trust that a client or a center of influence could ever place in you outside of their own money. And I would argue that it's even riskier because it's someone else. And if it goes badly, right, for yourself, that's one thing. If it goes badly for your friends, your family, or your boss, less than ideal. A referral is the single biggest act of trust equity that someone can give us. And the research that we did, I love Michael's research on marketing because I stopped doing research, but like, I don't know, 10 or 11 years ago, we actually at Quantibus, our first firm, did the first big study on marketing across the industry. It's really cool. I'll have to send it to you guys sometime because the data hasn't changed that much outside of the digital stuff. So that's where you're seeing the shift. And here's what that study told us about referrals. What percentage of people's growth came from referrals? Majority or less than a majority in general? Majority of business came from referrals, clients or center of influence. That is shifting very much as we look at the digital world, but referrals aren't going away anytime soon, right? That channel is always going to be there in terms of personal marketing and networking versus digital marketing. But the idea with the referral is someone is saying, I am placing in you the biggest single act of trust and confidence that I can convey. And about 97% of you do almost nothing. Nothing, like not even a thank you note. And about 3 to 5% of people send a thank you note. Now it's probably a thank you email at this point. In all fairness, the world has changed a lot in 10 years. But, and I'm not going to make you guys raise your hands, but when you think about referrals, do you openly acknowledge, we're not even going to talk about how yet, but do you openly acknowledge every one of those in a way that treats it with the regard that it should be treated? When you frame it through, this is the single biggest act of trust that someone can place in you. And that's the frame when we think about referrals. Like, how do we want to respond to that act of trust? So that's the frame for today's conversation. So what does that essentially mean? Referrals aren't magic. We all know that. You're all pretty good at them, but we also know that they're not scary, but they can be, right? When we ask for them, when we ask our teams to learn how to ask for them or talk about them. And then the question is, all these things come up with referrals. What if it's a referral? What if it fits? What if it doesn't fit? What about this? What about that? And so we get stuck in this, well, we just won't address it and or we'll process that transaction and we won't show up and sit in the space of trusted advisor, irrespective of what happens with the referral. So as we think about how we want to handle referrals, step one is really getting clear on why don't most people refer? So we're going to shift the way that we think about the way that people think about referrals today, which is we think that people make referrals when I talk to advisors because it's helping you or it's helping the person they're referring. And the truth is that's not why they're doing it at all. They're doing it for reasons that are really driven by their motivations. But when we understand that, which we'll talk about in just a second, we can start to solve the problems. Like what are the hurdles or the resistance points in terms of why people don't refer? One, I want you to think about the referral conversations you've had, if you've had them. What do you say about making referrals to your firm? Do you say, hey, if you have friends or family who have the same kinds of financial questions that you have and don't have access to the same kind of trusted advisor relationship that we do, we want you to know that even if they're not a divorcee who's within 5 years of retirement, we still believe that everyone should have access to that kind of advice, at least as they kick off. We always want to be your first phone call for friends or family, happy to spend 10 or 15 minutes with someone, getting a sense of their needs. And if we're not a fit for them, which in some cases we won't be, we have resources, we'll be happy to point them in the right direction. I'm not saying you have to take the first fit strategy. That's right. My personal value system is I like to be that first fit from an advisor perspective. You don't have to be. But the point is, notice that you're framing what that relationship looks like. Notice I said, hey, divorcees within 5 years. So there's a whole referral education process when we talk about branding, messaging, and telling your story. But that layers into our growth engine when we and our teams, right, for those that are client facing, aren't engaging with clients around referrals. So we talk about that really actively in the client referrals, right? Think about generating referral lessons. But I want to lay that groundwork here so that you see the impact that it has on the other side and how we can account for it in a, I'll call it a closed loop system for any engineers, right? So that it goes full circle. The other reason that a lot of people don't get as many referrals as they could, the opportunity cost is because we're hunting, not farming. We're paying attention for very short bursts of time, but we're not nurturing those client or center of influence or even digital relationships over time. So those are strategy reasons. And we talk about those again in the activating referrals. But what I really want to focus on today is the thing that's rarely talked about, which is what happens on the other side. And that's where every one of you, I can almost promise and guarantee, but knock on wood, I'm going to go with 99%. This is the power question. It's an exercise. You're going to go print your referral list, or you're going to have someone pull that for ideally the last 3 years, if you have to do it manually for as rate is reasonable relative to readily available information. You're going to have two categories of people. People who have referred once and people who have referred more than once. Because ideally, statistically speaking, if someone has referred once, they've engaged in the act of trust equity. Can we agree that's the hardest part? Getting someone to put you out there is the person that someone should call and give all their money to. That is, right, the single biggest hard part. Once that's over, nothing should be hard. So Isaac, someone says, I'm going to give you my $5 million. Here are my RSUs, right? I've sold everything. Man, you are the best. Thank you. Isaac had no problem asking for that money. No problem, right? Give me your life's work. I got this. And then I'm not saying this is Isaac, but general example, when it goes time to talk and about referrals and to ask for one, in general, we get all like, oh, I don't want to talk about referrals. That makes me look like I'm needy or a schmucky salesperson or whatever. It puts me in a really uncomfortable spot, so I don't do it. And this is where that breaks down for me. If I can sit across from someone or you can sit across from someone and say, give me every penny that you've ever made, saved, and earned, and trust me with it. And I promise that I'll deliver clarity, confidence, right? Good insurance, planning, investments, et cetera. And it's going to be okay. That's the biggest ask that you can make of someone. And then they say yes, and they give Isaac or David or Sherry the money. And 3 years later, we sit across and we're like, oh, we don't want to ask for a referral. So I can ask you to give me all the money that you've ever made and to trust me with it. But once I've delivered on it, once I've delivered on that promise and I've shown up and I've added the value, my knees knock when I ask you to let me help people that you know, like that makes no sense to me. Like if you think about the stories in our minds, there's no business case for it. It breaks down pretty quickly. And the reason is because the stories that we have around what asking means, that we're needy, we look like a salesperson, et cetera. And we talk again about a lot about that in the mindset piece and even when we're building that referral pipeline. But all of that psychology shows up the second that a referral is made. Because the second that someone engages in the biggest act of confidence they can, aside from giving you their money, we fail to recognize, reinforce, and reward that behavior. And by reward, I don't mean economics, although that sometimes does work. The biggest thing someone can do, and we're like, yo, peace out, thanks. And that's 3 to 5% of the time. The other 97% of the time, we don't even bother to acknowledge that a referral has been made. Someone has sent them to our door. We open the door, let them in, close the door, and didn't even say, hey, by the way, your kid is at my house. How does that position us in terms of our relationship with the referral source, especially if it's a center of influence? Trusted partner or yet another guy that wants those client referrals in, right? Like that's the framing that's really important from a behavioral perspective. We also need to understand that clients aren't invested in the outcome if we don't get the storytelling and the ask, right? Just, hey, if you have referrals that will help me grow, not that exciting. The famous, you know, slipping the piece of paper across the table. Can you please give me the name of 5 people you know who? I want you to know, by the way, that works. Scary as that is, that works. Why does it work? Because it is a system. And if you do it with confidence consistently, any system will produce a result, whether it's the right percentage, right? You want to optimize the result, but I promise you it actually works. So if we can show up with a dignified system, all the better. So through that process, we want to get clients invested in the outcome. And you're going to hear in just a second about why that investment becomes so important. And you're going to hear this about 6 more times in the next hour or so, which is we don't make the experience worth it. I have just engaged Liz in the single biggest act of trust and confidence that I can place in you. I've told someone I know to give you all their money and trust that it's going to be okay. That every hope and dream that you have is going to be fulfilled and every fear that you have is going to be assuaged by my advice. And your response to that is what? That's a read I'm not going to make, right? So that's the question I want you to ask yourself. What's my response to that? And is that enough? So the good news is this is a really easy gap to fill. This is not a big lift, which is why we're talking about it now. This is low-lying fruit that you can implement in your firm to increase the quantity and the quality of the referrals that you get without question, without fail, every single time. It will not create more referrals from an origin perspective. It will create more referrals from people who are already referring because they're going to have an entirely different experience. But until they have that experience, they can't understand the power of it, which is why you still have to do the client referral conversations and the COA campaigns, et cetera, to get people into the prospect process, which is, if you look at that prospect process from the lesson, it's going to be like a little in a flow chart, like a caveat that says got referral, right? Go here, do this is essentially, it's just going to be a process off of your prospect process. So here's what it essentially boils down to. You are misreading. We are often misreading why people don't refer. We think it's because they're trying to help us and they're trying to help the other person, and it's not. Behaviorally, they're helping themselves. Isaac, have you ever gone to a great restaurant and been like, God, this place is the jam, and then gone and told your friends about it? He's like, nope, never, gonna ruin your story. See, this is why I need to go to comedian school. Hey, what do you do in that situation, right? Did all your friends call you up, Isaac, and say, we're looking for a new restaurant. Do you have one?
Never.
No. So why did you tell them?
I was excited to talk about it, most likely.
Right. I'm just being honest. Like, you're so worried about whether they have dinner on Thursday night or a great new place. No, like when we have a great experience, we want to share that great experience. It validates our great experience. Right? When I buy a new car or a new used car, what do I see around me every single time without fail? I see that car. It validates my buying decision. They're not referring to Isaac or to Kim or to Chris to help you or even their friend. They are, in a sense, But the underlying motivator, the one that gets them off the couch and talking and saying, you need to call Chris, you need to call David, has to be personal. And that personal motivation is there's a positive experience on the other side of it. So you can't control that the first time. You can seed the heck out of it, which we talk about. But the second that it happens, you can take that ball and run it down the field because you have total control of everything that happens from that moment forward. And you don't in the sales, right? You can do all the SEO you want. When someone lands on the page, you still don't control what they do or where they click or whether they click the button or not. Once someone makes a referral, you have control of the experience from that point forward. I want you to exercise it. All right, you guys ready? Husband's calling me and I didn't put my hand on my brain. All right, so here's what it basically boils down to. I know this is going to be a huge surprise for all of you. It's a behavioral problem. I know that pretty much most of you have kids, and the ones of you that don't laugh at the rest of us with dark circles and bags under our eyes, but everyone's familiar with the potty training story. Everybody here get potty training? Yes, you well-rested people will appreciate it someday. I'm mocking you, Neil. Right. When Parker, my 14-year-old, went potty in the big boy potty for the first time, you're welcome to challenge. I consider myself a reasonably intelligent, rational, measured human being. What did I do the first time that my child went potty in the big boy potty? And what can I bet like pretty much 100% of my assets on you all did the first time your kids went potty in the big boy or big girl potty? What do we do? Oh my God, you're so awesome. Oh, I love you. You hit the Cheerio. Here's an M&M. I did that 3 days, works every time. I was like, yes, like the woman on the screen. Yay. Why do we do that? Interactive part.
Positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement. Why does that work?
Self-love.
Yeah, because people like to feel good and they don't like to feel bad. Like to feel bad. Use your good instead of evil. It's a righteous trick, right? As Carl would call it, it's a righteous trick. We're trying to reinforce the behavior by recognizing it in a way that is validating, acknowledging, and positive. Because I know that if we do that, what is someone's brain hardwired to seek out? More of that experience. Use your powers for good instead of evil. That doesn't mean that you're going to get 5,000 referrals in the next week. It means that your ability to turn up the dial on the quantity and quality of referrals that you receive, and you'll start to see how that works in a minute, is going to radically improve with a ridiculously low level of effort. And those are the strategies that we love here, like client surges. Make a little change, get a huge result. This is a little change, huge result conversation. And it essentially boils down to this. We're messing it up. We're just busy. It's not our intent. We all know better when we talk about it, but our ability to sit down and thoughtfully say, when someone places the most confidence in me that they could ever possibly place, how would they like to curate that experience? We don't really, remember, our brains don't finish the math. Like, ooh, we got a referral. Yay, thank you, note. If I sat down with Parker O'Neill and I said, Parker, there's a note in the bathroom for you. And he opened his little envelope and it said, dear Parker, thank you for going potty in the big boy potty. I really appreciate it. XOXO mommy. Do you think he'd have been motivated to do it again as that crazy lady with the M&Ms? Nope. Why? Neutral is boring, and boring does not register. It doesn't get anyone's attention, which means it doesn't surface later. If I make a referral to Isaac and I feel good about myself as a result of that referral, what are the odds that my brain goes looking for that kind of validation again? Especially if it's easy, I just have to subconsciously pay attention and then be like, oh, hey, I know a guy. Like, it's not even hard. So that's the hurdle that you're overcoming. You all have clients who are incubators. So as you look at your client list, Allison will note, I'll send you guys an article I wrote a long time ago, but it's still very true. You have clients and COIs who are incubators. Incubators, or we'll start with influentials. Influentials are people that are referring to you or having a positive influence. They're inviting Sherry to speak, or Melissa, they're connecting you with people, right? But in general, they're people who have made a referral. They have a demonstrated impact. Isaac, a client referred another client, they're an influential. They have the ability to influence our outcome with very little effort. We love those people. Second group of people are incubators. By definition, what is an incubator? David, if you had to guess.
Somebody who just wants to kind of keep to themselves, right?
Now we can incubate them, right? We're going to just keep dripping on them, right? Like Parker in the preemie tube for 10 weeks. He was there a little while until they're ready to come out, right? So it's kind of an up or out strategy, right? So incubators are people who we think have the potential to become an influential, but we don't know yet. So we want to maybe build a process to help them along so we don't have to wait the 5 years of quick phone calls and emails and hoping we, you know, get all those touch points together. Like, we're going to build a discipline process around it. So the behavioral problem is that we don't account for all of these things when we're building our referral management process. One, I don't think it's established as a best practice in the space in terms of, like, we should have one that is more than a thank you note, because we want to create that kind of experience that people pull themselves to create. Because if you go to your list and someone has referred once and never again, it means that either statistically, they know no one else that they could possibly refer you to. And that is possible, but not likely. Or B, it was just such an experience that they are simply not going to exert the effort to go out of their way to find it again. Because if they replicate it, what's the reward? More I'm a busy person. I got a lot to do. Am I going to talk about that cool restaurant or that referral experience that I had? So our goal is to recognize that we own 75% of referral behavior. How they receive it and what they do in response is ultimately up to them. But we own the awareness, the education, and the experience that is happening on their end. And then we influence the opportunity that comes on the other side of that. So if you knew that you controlled 75% of that experience, would you exercise that with a little bit more intention? And I think the answer for most of us is yes. So here's what it basically boils down to: high level, and then we're going to go into the details. And then we can talk about how you apply it, which is one, a sincere, personal, authentic thank you, like acknowledgement. So we're going to talk more deeply about why that matters and how to go into it, but it's acknowledgement is essentially what it is. Two, what it means. When you acknowledge an act and what it means, then A, you are setting the story. This means that you trust and have confidence in me. If I say that and the other person doesn't go, no, Liz, that's not true at all, then their brain's like, yes, I do have trust and confidence in Liz. Let's keep that up, right? So we get to acknowledge the act and what it means and create that shared story. We get to create the collaboration. What does that process look like? Now, if I said to you, Neil, I've got this place for you to go. It's awesome. And I'm going to take you right up to the door. And then I'm going to push you in. And then I've actually never been inside. I've just heard about it. But you go in and then tell me about it later. What's the likelihood of that?
Yeah, not thrilled with that.
Not thrilled with that. But what if I know that party inside is rocking? I'm like, hey, let me tell you what's going to happen when I put you through this doorway. And I have complete clarity and confidence about what's going to happen. Am I more likely to put you in the doorway?
Yes.
Absolutely. Right. So we have to create a collaborative space that makes people feel that way, whether they're clients or centers of influence. This is really important. This is the biggest mistake that people make with respect to referrals. We recognize the result, not the referral behavior. I don't care if the first referral that you get from someone is an awful fit, is a jerk, hates your fee. Don't care in the slightest. Awesome opportunity to step into that situation and fill the gap. So we'll talk about how you can do that, but I want you to understand that this entire system is built on the behavioral underpinning, that it is all about how I feel engaging in the process and not about the immediate result. If they refer 10 times and it doesn't work 10 out of 10 times, you are going to have an issue. That's never happened. And then it really boils down to teamwork's what makes the dream work. We've got to get them on the field. If I'm like, hey, David, I'm in the bleachers and I'm playing a game. Will you come cheer for me? He's going to be like, go you. If I'm like, hey, David, the tight end's sick. Can you get in here and run the ball with us? Now is David's desire to see the team win going to go up or down? by like a factor of what? There's no scientific research for this, by the way, but if you had to guess, like by a little bit or a lot? By a lot. I want to, like, when I'm in the game, who wants to be on the losing team? Nobody on this call, that's for sure, right? Like, once you're in the game, you're like, I am in it to win it. I will get that ball down the field. Tell me how I can help. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. That's the kind of relationship that you're looking for from your client referrals, particularly your centers of influence. And the question is, how do we create that? So here's the simple answer. It's five simple steps. It's three for clients because the level of detail that you can discuss with respect to a client situation is obviously different between, right, you and one of their professional advisors and their friend down the street. So let's talk about the COI, the Center of Influence process, because it's the most in-depth one. 90% of this process does not require you. It is a click a button in the CRM and everything happens automatically. In the absence of that, you can literally print out the page and not mess it up. You like print it out, write the client's name at the top, and make sure you complete all five steps. I'm a fan of systems and CRM, so that is the ideal. But as you start to use it, don't let that stop you, is what I'm trying to communicate. So I call it the five-step referral log or the roadmap for professionals or center of influence. Here is step one. Based on the conversation we've had, step one is recognition. I recognize this act and what it means. Not only do I recognize, I'm actually going to level set that on. I'm going to level set that, get your agreement on it. And that in and of itself is going to deepen our relationship. Melissa, thank you. Melissa, I just wanted to take a second to say, thanks so much for your trust and confidence. I know that you have a lot of choices when it comes to these decisions, and it really means a lot to me that this is where you decided to go, or this is the referral you decided to make, or I'm the advisor that you, right? Do you notice the difference in those conversations? If I say to Parker, thank you for going potty in the big boy potty, he's like, whatever. If I say, bad example, because at three, no one cares, but if I say, thank you for your trust and confidence, it really means a lot to me. I know that's not a choice that you make lightly, and I value it. What am I saying? What am I seeding? What am I implying that they are, unless they go, nope, Melissa, that's BS. You're not any of those things. What if I got an implied agreement around? That you trust me, that you have great confidence in me, that you refer people to me, that I don't let you down, right? Like those are the messages that seed relationship. That is priority one, because relationship trumps results every single time. How do I know? Half the population still married. That was a joke, you guys. Come on. Am I the only one that got that? All right. Neil got it. Liz got it. I'm definitely taking the comedian class now. Recognition is really all about saying to someone, I see you. I acknowledge what you've done and I appreciate it. In a way that cuts through the transaction and gets to the trust equity. Thank you is a transaction. I'm touched by the confidence, or I'm touched by your confidence, is relationship equity. That's that. Now we're bleeding into that trust equity that we're constantly trying to see. So with referrals, particularly professional referrals, the biggest hurdle is we met, we agreed there's some cool stuff, we've got some clients, they've got some clients, and then lunch happened and nothing happened since, right? Or we got one referral and nothing. And again, it's because they're busy and they're not doing any of the work that you're learning here. So imagine what it's like for them to keep up. We have to assume that responsibility for the process and the relationship. So step one is recognition. You are literally going to make a telephone call. Old fashioned, I know, but we're going to do it. You can record a Loom video. That's the modern, really cool version, because you're going to miss people a good majority of the time, but you're essentially going to say, I'm touched by your confidence. I will give it my immediate attention and I will keep you posted. Hey, Neil, I just wanted to shoot you a quick video. I know you're busy, but I just wanted to say thanks so much for referring John and Jane. It looks like they've got some really specific needs. I look forward to meeting with them, but I think you're probably spot on. I just wanted to say thanks again for the trust and confidence. I'm going to be following up with you to get a little bit more insight and information from your perspective, but I just wanted to take a second to say thanks we'll be in touch, blah, 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 right? I'm literally building some like trust equity and laying the foundation for the relationship. And as long as they continue, we have implied consent that they, that I do in fact demonstrate those attributes, which is actually very meaningful. He also said, I'm gonna give it my immediate attention. Why? What do we give our immediate attention?
Things that are important.
Things that are important. And if the client is important, what does it say about the referral source? I'm a busy professional. If Melissa makes a referral and I'm like, great, I really appreciate your trust and confidence. If Jane and Jack reach out, we'll make sure to give it our immediate attention. And as soon as we have any information or updates, we'll be sure to keep you posted. What if I said, I acknowledge you, all this great stuff. I'm informing you, you're part of the team, you matter, you're important, you're informed, I need your insight. So now I'm seeding the next step, which is actually step three. So step two is enhancement. So you will, you can do a video, you can make a phone call, then you send the email. I like the human piece first. You will ultimately get to the point where when you go through this process with people who have been through it multiple times, when the trust equity is established, David, they will say to you, actually, we don't need to have that call, Dave. Here's everything you need to know about Jack and Jane, because I've gone through this process with you four times now. And my trust quotient, they're not going to tell you that, but their trust quotient is like, boom, boom, boom. I know it's going to happen because it happens the same way every time. I make a referral. David thanks me in this really nice way. You don't use the exact same words every time. These are the themes I want you to communicate in your words and style. Because it says it's important, right? All those behavioral things we want to see. Then we go to step two, which is where we just want to reinforce that. We're just enhancing it. So once you have a conversation with the client and or set an appointment, typically you're going to set an appointment if there's a referral. That's going to happen the majority of the time. You're going to send a confirmation. You might still send paper. You might be sending email. The goal is to simply CC the advisor or referral source on that to the extent that it's appropriate if it's a client. With a confirmation letter, it's usually okay. And in the ideal, either do a handwritten note. Back in the old day, this worked really well. Or in modern times, you would forward the email because you want to add your personal message. Which is, if you're mailing it, it's really nice to just pull out, right, print the letter, David. And at the top of that letter that says, this will confirm your appointment on, we look forward to all that stuff. You're just gonna be like, hey, Bob, wanted to say thanks again for your trust and confidence. We continue to focus on blah, blah, blah. We'll keep you posted after the meeting, right? Hugs and kisses, David. If that's an email, it's just sending the confirmation email and then having the system forward the referral and email that says, hey, just wanna let you know, we scheduled the appointment. As always, appreciate the confidence. Look forward to connecting with you to get your insights. So that step three is you're ultimately going to move to that next step, which is you want them on the field with you. I don't want David in the bleachers saying, here's the referral and sending them to the door and not knowing what happens. I want him on the field. I want him winning the game. So step three is you're actually going to talk, in the case of the center of influence, to the center, right? To the accountant, the attorney, the asset protection, whoever it is, the divorce specialist. And you're going to have the conversation that runs along the lines of, this is your client and relationship. There was some need that you or they saw. I would love to better understand that. I would appreciate and value your insights into them, their finances, what matters, right? There's all those dynamics. Chris, if the CPA called you up and said, hey, I'm referring Jack and Jane. They've got $2.2 million. He's got an optometry practice. She really makes all the decisions. So you definitely want to talk to her in the meeting, right? That one of their kids has got a drug and alcohol issue, right? Their mom's going, like, wouldn't you love to know all that in the beginning?
Absolutely. And
if you have this step, you'll get all of that. And they'll value it because what you said is, I'm not that hoity advisor who thinks I'm all that in a bag of chips that just wants me, you to send me clients. I'm actually looking for a relationship, right? Based on trust and collaboration, because that's what advisors promise all the time and then get a bad rap for not delivering. You're going to deliver. When they make a referral, you're going to call, right? You're going to do these first steps and you're going to have a conversation that says, tell me more. Help me understand why you perceived this need. How did it come up? What insight did you give them? What is their understanding of planning? Can you help me understand how you level set their meeting with me? You're going to get fast information. You have everything you need going into that meeting. If it's a client referring a client, obviously it's going to be a different conversation. It's going to be a, hey, a thank you. If there's any insight you can share, that'd be great. I'm happy to talk to them, right? Because with clients, everybody just wants to know that everybody's information is private. So you want to draw a very different line there. But participation is really engaging them in the experience so that they feel the positive, right, relationship, the referral, and ultimately the results that are going to come out of it. Once you do the participation piece, step four is having the prospect meeting. That's pretty straightforward. We have lessons on that, right? Go see lesson A. Once you have the meeting, this is another key point that is easy to get wrong and so valuable to get right. We have these rules that I call the AMPM rule. And the AMPM rule is that if you have a meeting in the morning with the prospect, phone or otherwise, you have to tell the referral source status update by the afternoon or the PM. If, David, the meeting is in the PM or the afternoon, you need to tell the referral source by the following morning, right? AMPM rule. Here's why. He who tells is swell and he who doesn't is to blame. When someone makes a referral, in particular, a center of influence, and it doesn't work out, the big risk and fear is that you will not get another referral. And it's a significant fear and it's a real risk because they don't know what happened on the other side of the door. They just know they sent you someone that they thought would be a good fit and it didn't work out. Who's very likely to be blamed for that interaction in the absence of framing to the alternative? Whose fault is it going to be? It is your fault. 100% of the time. Do you know how I know? Because the prospect is never going to call the CPA or their friend and be like, Neil was really great. His fees were high and I'm sure he was worth every penny. I'm cheap. No, that's not going to be the conversation. It's be like, it was great until he quoted me the fee and then wow. And again, I'm just using that as an example. Or, right, there's conflict in the relationship and you can sense that and they're not in agreement. And so how do you address those issues? And the answer is, you address those issues in the follow-up and it's perfect because you get to say anything because you're on the same team. So Neil gets to pick up that phone and say, hey, Bob, I'm sorry that I missed you, but I wanted to let you know that I met with Jack and Jane this morning and you were spot on. They did have some really significant needs. We had what I thought was a great 75-minute conversation that dove into A, B, and C. And we kind of wrapped up with an overview of the value that we add in the process that we used to add it. I quoted in the fees. I felt like they were on board up to that point, but I'll be really honest. It felt like they pulled back a little bit. I don't know what their experience with advisors or fees are in terms of right value billing versus hourly. As you know, our fees aren't the least expensive, but they're not the most expensive. They're fair for the value that we add. If they have any questions, I hope that you'll support and answer them. If there's anything I can do to communicate that value more clearly, please let me know. Now, whose fault is it? Now it's the prospect because, well, they just don't get it. Now they're cheap. You're not expensive. They're cheap. And I'm using that right in as a stereotyping context. But if you position the outcome through your framing, then unless it's unreasonable, they're going to say, okay. If there's a breakdown in fit, if David does that and the person is like, wow, all my clients are saying no to your fees, then clearly there's a breakdown and we will address that in the process or we'll find another relationship. But that's not what happens most of the time. What happens most of the time is they get really engaged and they go, oh, yeah, I get that. And then when the client goes, hey, you know, I talked with Neil and he seemed really great, but his fees were, you know, his minimum fees were $10,000. Now, what is that referral source more likely to say? Totally get that. That could seem like a lot of money, but Neil's fees aren't the least expensive. They're not the most, you know, really fair. Like they're going to 9 times out of 10 repeat some version of what you shared because that's easy and efficient. So our job is to get really clear on what do we want to educate and seed as it relates to those potential breakdowns. It was a fee issue. They weren't ready. Okay, how do we talk about it? Hey, they seemed great. I think there was a lot of value. There were things they were really interested in, but when it came time to decisions, I sensed a little tension. They just need to go home and talk about it. You know them a lot better than I do. It might be worth a follow-up. I think you were spot on. There was a lot of value that we could add with planning, and I think it would be great for them. But as you know, this is the kind of thing that people have to be ready for. If there's anything I can do, please let me know. Are any of these conversations hard to have? Do any of them make you look anything but dignified, professional, and utterly on your game? So any breakdown that you have in the referral process, it's not a fit, they're, you know, cheap, they want, you know, X and you do Y, you have the meeting, you add as much value as you can, that's your commitment. And then you call that referral source and you position and frame the story so that that becomes the shared story. This is how you control the relationship or influence to a much greater probability if the referral says no, because that is often the death knell. Someone sends you a trusted client, they meet with you and you're too expensive. Harder to get that next referral. Not gonna lie, it's harder. You might not even know that's why you didn't get the referral. There's no way that happens in this model, because Neil calls up and he's like, hey, and if Neil doesn't know, the CPA or the attorney will eventually know. Like, hey, I don't really know where, like, I felt like we were in a good place and it kind of turned left at the end. I'm not entirely sure, but I think there's some real value that we can add here. It might be worth a follow-up, or if you get any more information, let me know. Hey, just want to let you know, I'm going to follow up with them again the day after tomorrow. And right, if there's anything we can do to get them the information we need to make good informed choices, like that's the goal here, whether they work with me or not. That referral source is never going to be like, Neil, you are a schmuck. I'm never sending you another referral. In fact, that referral source is overwhelmingly likely to be like, oh my God, who is this guy? He's not a schmuck like all those other people. Because everyone else asked for the referral, doesn't deliver on the relationship, the trust equity, right? The reliability, the relationship, and the results are what we're essentially packaging here in a way that people can discern quickly and readily to draw really good conclusions about you. And all we have to do is follow 5 steps. When we get a referral, we always recognize it. We always rate, enhance, and reinforce it. We always participate in the process with the referral source. We always, when possible, hold a prospect call or meeting. And then we always follow up with that AMPM rule. And as we go through that process, I like to do it in the first part of the process because I don't want it to be tied to result, is you want to do anything that you can to recognize and reinforce that reward behavior. Thank you. My favorite recognition is food, because we're humans and we like it. It's easy, it's accessible. Thank you. My husband just brought me a ginger shot. That's really nice of him. I was asking for one this morning. And my, we will talk. There's lots of ideas we can talk about, but here's my favorite. And people don't mind if you send it over and over. Sherry's Berries. Have I shown any of you Sherry's Berries? Do they rock? Yeah, I've never in 30 years had anyone do anything except say, oh my God, those were amazing. Thank you. Like, people go out of their way to thank you for them when they want other gifts. They are these gigantic chocolate covered strawberries that arrive the next day, like freeze dried, and they're decorated and drizzles, and you can add cookies and all that. But the berries, like, you can send half a dozen or a dozen or 2 dozen berries to someone. So back before everyone worked remote, so not everyone does, but this is the shift, is I never sent them to homes. Always sent them to work. Why? When food shows up in your office, or did, what was the first thing that happened without fail every time? Bet your retirement account on it.
Everything stops.
Everything stops. Who's got the food, right? If it's like someone's leftovers from 5 days ago, no one cares. But if it's cake, cookies, candy, anything yummy and delicious, everybody loves their dopamine. It's a swarm. And then what's the first question that always gets asked? I can predict this without fail.
Where did you get that?
I don't know. That's a great question. My financial advisor sent them to me. What? Why did he do that? Because I made a referral. Oh, where is the downside here? Like, I was like, do not send them to people's homes. I don't care. Send them to their offices. If they don't even work there anymore, still send it to their office. Because it's human behavior, right? All we're doing, I don't make the rules. I'm just using what I know about neuroscience and behavioral psychology to help us leverage them in righteous ways, which is people love food. They can't help but talk about it. They feel good when they talk about it. And if your name comes up, that's never bad. The worst thing that happens is that you get a referral that doesn't fit. And that's okay, because what do you get to do? You get to add value and you get to redirect them to the right resource. And that the way that we teach you to do that, and if you don't remember that, please let me know, will always strengthen your relationship with the referral source. It will always put you in a place of professionalism and respect and dignity, because you're handling it that way. So that's the five-step process, is you simply want to acknowledge them in a way that basically underpins three key messages. I'm reliable. That's why there are five steps, not because you can't do it all in one. You can. This is not about efficiency. This is all about experience. I want to demonstrate to you in five quick but simple steps. That participation call, Kim, that might be a 30-minute call. All of the steps, especially the conversations, will be longer in the beginning. When you do this with referral sources and you develop the relationship, invariably, what happens after a few referrals? The trust equity is checked. I know what Neil's going to do every time because he's done it three times. I know he's awesome. Every time he covers the issues, he involves me, he keeps me informed. I'm going to be a busy person and I'm going to say, hey, Neil, I've got a referral for you. I know you want to catch up. I really appreciate that, but I'm just going to give you the download now. Keep me posted. And I'm going to do not skip any steps until they pull that trigger. You do not get to decide when their trust quotient is high enough to skip the steps. They do. But they will every time at some point say, do not pass go. You'll just get an email that's like, I referred Bob. Here's everything you need to know about Bob. Have fun. Because they know that they're going to be involved and informed and be on the other side of that in a way that reflects, works for the client and reflects well on them. So those are the five steps. And three steps for clients are much simpler because, again, you're not going to have that deep participation call and you're not going to follow up and be like, hey, they said yes because of the fees or no because of the fees, but you can still do those steps because it's about letting people feel recognized and reinforcing that you're reliable, you're right, building a relationship. You understand this is a big deal and you're ultimately going to deliver results. You can't deliver the outcome, but you can deliver results through a process. I can keep you informed. I can give you insights. I can make you feel important through this process. And if you can do that, they will be much more likely to refer again. Some of those referrals won't be a fit, especially as you all are working through, right, the client model and niching and getting more targeted around where you focus growth. That's okay, because you get to have the power conversation that says, hey, Bob, I really appreciate you referring Jane and Jack. I spent 20 minutes with them, got them really grounded on their situation. They had three big questions. Here's what they were. Here's how I answered it. I realized as I was sitting down with them that over the last few years, as we've made this shift to, right, retirees within 5 years or divorcing women or, right, employees with stock options, I realized that I haven't done a good job of communicating with you about those changes. And I thought it might be a good idea to sit down. Could I stop by for coffee or whatever? And then you're just going to be honest and be like, hey, we love financial, right? Your version, right? We love financial planning. And in the last few months, few years, whatever, we've had, right, a flux of clients focused on. We can add a lot of deep value there. We've made the intentional decision to add really deep and specialized value to this group of clients. We understand that not everyone has access to that kind of advice. If you're in the first phone call camp, hey, we want to be the first phone call for your friends and family that might have financial needs. You guys have heard me do that a number of times, right? Insert conversation. So it's a way to support that relationship without ultimately serving it on a long-term basis, which again adds value to the relationship. And over time, those referrals, those phone calls will go down. They over time will be like, okay, this person has $200,000. I've got this advisor over here I can refer them to. I don't need to send them to David for a phone call. And that's okay because, again, as we inform and educate, they alter the experience to fit so that when they have someone that really fits, you know that you're getting the ringing endorsement. And they know what that experience is like on the other side. If someone doesn't know what referring to you is like from beginning to end, you need to update your referral process. The education, right? We have a whole lesson around that. But it's about telling the story of, hey, when you make a referral, I would love for you to understand what actually happens with clients and how we can partner on that relationship over time. Hey, our clients are, right, executives with RSUs, blah, blah, blah. We do a lot of, I don't know, Isaac, what do you do? ILITs or NIMCRETs or this or that. And when we do, we're going to need to call on you for accounting advice or estate planning advice. So you can still see the value that's going to come back to them in those relationships from a client and an economic perspective. So it's really about educating them on how you work without telling them that. On the front end, you'll tell them, hey, when you make a referral, we're really big on taking the team approach. I know everyone says that. let me walk you through our process, right? And you're going to tell your story and your prospect process. You're going to do all that, which we go to again in another lesson. And then you're going to say, and when you make a referral, it's really important to us that you be a part of that process if you want to, because right, they're your client. You have the insight and information. So our job is to partner to get them the information they need to make good choices. Sometimes, a lot of the time, we'll be that choice. Sometimes we won't. When we're not, here's how we'll handle it. Right? We want to be your first phone call. It like, you know, like there's modular conversations that you're inserting where they fit. So that's the idea with both the five steps and with the three steps, you're just skinnying out the detailed client conversations again, just given client confidentiality, but you're going through those three steps consistently. At some point, you're going to do some kind of acknowledgement or thank you. Minimum, as noted in the details, is a thank you note or email. I'm a fan of notes. Why am I a fan of thank you notes? No one sends them.
We don't get good mail.
No one gets them anymore. When you get a thank you note, do you actually pay attention? Absolutely. Now, if it's a boring thank you note, you're like, whatever. But if, David, it was a note that said, hey, I just wanted to take a second to just thank you again for the trust and confidence, blah, 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 or it was a copy of that letter, I'd be like, oh, a little feel good moment. Okay, thank you. That's what we're trying to reinforce, is those information feels good, acknowledgement feels good, participation feels good. So you're just showing up with that through a behavioral lens. It says I'm reliable, I'm relationship oriented, truly, and I'm results oriented. You're going to feel good about this experience no matter what the outcome is. I'm going to feel good because no matter what the outcome is, I have a path that I can take you down. You're not going to say it in that way, but you know you have a path you can take me down. I have to re-educate you. I have to say thank you and follow the process. Or it's going to lead to, hey, there's a breakdown here and this relationship isn't going to work. And that's fine because we can redirect that energy to one that values that kind of relationship. So the referral roadmap is not a particularly big or complicated process. Quite honestly, it's one page. And one page has five steps and one page has three steps, but it's the consistency and the quality of the interaction that is embedded into the process that makes it so fail-safe. Is that if you just follow those steps remotely close, you don't have to use our words, David, right? However, Dave Jr. wants to pick up the phone and be like, hey, you can't say the same thing 50 times. I appreciate your trust and confidence, right? You have to be like, hey man, like, if someone's referring for the sixth time you have a relationship, you can be like, Bob, you're taking this confidence thing to a whole new level. Like, I appreciate it. But you're trying again to evoke that emotional experience of feeling trustworthy and reliable. Like all of those feelings is how we want people to feel about you. When they feel about that way about you, the referrals flow. Then you can tell them anything, and then better qualities and quantities of referrals flow. They will come to you and say things like, no joke, happens all the time. What changed? Like, really? You didn't notice that there was now a process and berries and phone calls? Like, you really have to ask me that question? But COIs are literally like, what changed? Something's different. Yes, something is different. So you'll notice that they'll be more engaged. So the goal is, once you get this going, especially if referrals are a part of your growth strategy, how many interactions are there around one prospect referral? We haven't even talked about the work yet. I've got five touch points. I have five good reasons to interact with that person. That puts me at center shelf on the cereal aisle, like right there at eye level in terms of top of mind. So that when I'm talking to my other clients and right experiences, the likelihood that I'm going to think of David when I think of that retiree, or Melissa when I think of that woman, is simply higher. We've created that sticky factor in the brain. We haven't done it by being unique and curious in the odd or different sense. We've done it by being unique in the memorable sense. And that's why it only took me 3 days to potty train Parker, right? Because at the end of the day, if you can tap into people's needs, their needs, the motivation is there for them to bridge the gap. And the need with referrals is to be informed and to feel important and to feel in that process, right? In terms of the relationship and the participation. So I will pause there. It's a lot of conversation around five basic steps, but there's a lot of behavioral stuff. Liz is laughing, right? It's all baked into that process so that you and the team can click the button, hit the switch, sign the letter, make the phone call, and do it for the most part in 5 minutes outside of that one participation call. And again, you'll get to the point where they just drop that in an email and you go. So I'll pause there. We've got another 20 or so minutes if you guys want to dive into questions around that. He was 3 when I did it. 3 days at 14 wouldn't be very impressive at all. Yeah. I have to admit there were Cheerios and M&Ms involved, but it worked really well.
Stephanie, I wanted to just share with everyone, when you said send the gifts to the work instead of their household. Yeah, yeah. I mean, what a great idea. It's kind of happened by accident, but I started a few years ago sending all of our clients cheesecake from Harry and David. And I sent it to them like right around Thanksgiving time. And sure enough, they eat it with their families, right? And like my conversation would, my name would come during like either Thanksgiving or Christmas time with their family. It was just I didn't do it for that reason, but it was just a really good way to kind of, be front and center.
Yeah, well, and the thing is when you it's another form of branding, right? Your clients come to, I'm sure, right, anticipate those cheesecakes, right? We have someone that always sent us this big homemade wreath for the door every year. And after a couple of years, I was like, okay, when's my wreath coming? Like it became like, now you have to make sure that's the goal. But that's the idea, is it just becomes an embedded part of the experience and you can have fun with it. So I had a client in the Midwest and then this incredible bakery in this town, and they had like these massive apple pies. And they were like world famous in their town, right? They like decorated them in a certain way. And so every summer they had a big 4th of July barbecue. And anyone that made a referral over the course of the year got what?
Apple pie.
They got a pie to take home. And guess what happened? All the time. People love those pies. And then they just started a thing, like people made a referral, they would just have the bakery send the pie over. And it became a thing because people would be like, oh, I'm going to make a referral. I'm going to get a pie. So it does not have to be the Sherry's Berries. That is a fun, easy one that everybody always loves. I have fun with it. Again, you got to pick your brand and style. But whenever I use the berries, if you've ever gotten berries from me, I promise you there is a 100% probability that this is true, is that I will use the word berry in quotes in the message. Thank you very much for the referral. I'm very sorry for the miss. And it's a little thing, but people really love it. And it makes it like a fun, unique, different kind of, and again, like you have to use your mind, so ideally as people make more referrals, you're not going to send them the same note every single time. So you have to get a little creative. That's a high quality problem. I'm happy to have, by the way, right? There's no downside to that problem. But yeah, that is essentially the idea, I've had clients do wine glasses with initials engraved, right? So you want to beer glasses, whiskey glasses, Joe, you want to complete the set. There's no end, anything special or novel is really cool, right? The berries are kind of a thing, or your special pie, or right, you're in Wisconsin and cheese is the thing. Like, what is it that you can do to really have that impact? And ideally to create the social, what you're really trying to do is create socialization around the thank you gift if possible, right? Cheesecake or glasses that people use later, because somewhere, whatever you send, if someone's like, what is that? Where did it come from? They're talking about you, which reinforces their feel good feelings and their branding and again, marketing for you. Again, doesn't mean you're going to get 50 client referrals, but I think we can all agree there's no downside to that. But yeah, David, those are great things to use. People get used to them. They're like, I made a referral. Where's my cheesecake? David, where's my cheesecake? And you guys know that stuff really happens. All right. What other questions do you have around using the referral roadmap? You guys wildly excited? You guys are, is it Monday? Should we do these calls on Friday? So you guys are really like enthusiastic and talkative.
We don't work Fridays.
Yeah. You're making me do all the work on Mondays. So let's just do, we've got, 15 or 20 minutes. Why don't we just do a quick roundtable on what your takeaways are from this and how you think, again, you don't have to prioritize it for the near term, but as you think about it, what might you apply in terms of a takeaway? And is it something, like, how would you view it from a sense of priority? Why don't we start with you, Neil?
My takeaway from this is it's all muscle memory. It's things that I'm doing, but it's not a process. And so whether we put it inside of Salesforce or whether we just use that one pager that you were showing from the roadmap guidebook, actually making it a process. And so we do it when we refer out to our virtual family office partners. We send the info, we'll shoot a quick Loom video, we'll give them all the story beforehand. And then making sure that we're doing that as far as when client or COI referrals come in, having that process in place so that whether I do it or the team does it, it gets done. And then I also liked your idea about the, I called it basically, what's your referral brand? Again, whether that's the pies or the Sherry's berries or whatever it is, but making sure there's something consistent that's happening as a thank you for that referral.
Think of it as if you're familiar with rock climbing, when you think about them setting the anchors, we set the anchors so that, right, there's only so far to fall, right? So that we're elevating the client. And that's essentially what those refer, what you're talking about is every time they get one of those novelty, it sort of takes it up and like people get used to them. And so it just becomes part of an actual experience, which is entirely different than a transaction. And when you take referrals from an experience to a transaction, that's when you'll see the dial turn up on those referrals. Like we've seen referral relationships that literally go from, you know, a trickle here or there to 5, 6, 7 referrals and more a year, because all of a sudden it's a very different dynamic in terms of how they're being engaged. And that's essentially what it boils down to. Yeah, so think about things in your areas, right? Things related to your brand, anything that can be a specific, think of it as a novelty, but not necessarily in a cheeky way, to really carve out that shelf space, right? When you go to the grocery store, what cereal is at eye level, right? The companies that pay the most for the shelf space, that's at eye level, right? The really quality companies with low margins is on the bottom left. You have to go looking for that cereal. You want to be front and center from a top of mind shelf space perspective. And this process will certainly do that. And it will absolutely elevate your brand in terms of the reliability and the trust and the professionalism. All right, Melissa, how about you in terms of key takeaways and how you might apply it?
Definitely the process. I already had a preview from the rest of the team being on the earlier call. But I was just thinking about whether it should be tied to the client onboarding or the, you know, the client workflow, or I think it needs to be its own separate workflow.
Yeah, you can pull it off the prospect process. So it's an if then, if prospect referred, right? If client equals trigger campaign 19, if COI campaign 20. You can get really fun with it if you have a large quantity of referrals, if you have them from estate planning attorneys, right? Then you can build those marketing communications even more specifically. Thanks for referring Jane for her divorce needs. You know, little tweaks like that just help again to create that, you know, sort of the attentive and specialized piece around the brand. But at the end of the day, as long as it's automated, to Neil's point, if you do it consistently, and that those 5 steps on your desk where you're just looking at your prospects on a consistent basis, the CRM is awesome because we do get busy and we forget to make that follow-up phone call. And we're like, I'll get to it tomorrow and I'll get to it tomorrow. And when the client or the potential client calls the referral source and says, I didn't work with them because, or leaves it ambiguous, you will always hold the responsibility for that lack of. And it doesn't mean that you can't overcome it, but it is a hurdle. If you position that story as we talked about, and that's where the process is very helpful, is just making sure that the timeliness of those interactions happen, right? So when you have a prospect meeting, Melissa, part of that workflow, if it's a referral, should be the call to the referral source goes on the calendar, right? Right after the meeting you're doing, or if you're doing, you know, you're not doing surges for prospect meetings for the most part. So somewhere in the next 24 hours, there should be time on the calendar to make those phone calls and it will just show up on the list automatically.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's especially with the family law referrals, which are prevalent.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a lot of dynamics that go into those. So you have plenty to talk about in those conversations. And they will, I think, especially in those cases, hourly billing and all that, they're going to be like, here's what you need to know as soon as that trust equity is there. And like Neil said, they'll drop in an email or video and they'll give it to you and move through the process. They do that because that reliability has been established. They know that you would have done those other things and they trust that you're going to show up with the same care and concern, even if they give you permission to skip those steps, which means that you have to still show up with the same care and concern, right? The follow-ups and all that still happen after the meeting, because an email is just a quick thing. Like, hey, we talked to them. We'd love to follow up. If you've got questions, let us know. Can always go out the same day as the meeting. And then you can follow up personally. All right, Liz, how about you? What lands for you as you think about this?
So we decided this year for our marketing plan, just to keep it really simple and do a lot of COI reach outs and just get coffee and lunch. And so what I find in my mind is that I'm toggling back and forth between keep it simple and like build out the whole process and make it perfect. And then it clicks my like, got to get the website up first that shows the new niche that we're going. And I just keep bringing myself back to like, no, keep it simple. This is a relationship. All I'm doing is relationship building. And that doesn't have to be any more complex. So I do like the follow-up process instead of like implementing the follow-up process versus like getting everything ready beforehand to then go into it and eventually get to the follow-up process. It's a great place to start.
And it's why we're doing it, right? It's why I layer it into the conversation earlier, because the level of effort is incredibly low. Like Neil, you can print out that page and sit it on your desk, but the amount that it can be accretive quickly is very good. And then to your point, then as you're addressing other priorities, then you go back and you focus on seeding and activating those relationships or rebooting the ones that maybe made that one referral and like, and we kind of let it drop and we didn't implement this. So you'd launch a new relationship campaign and or reboot campaigns, but you're absolutely right. This is the low-lying fruit. None of that's required. Any of you can do this starting tomorrow. If you don't have any more specificity around your niche or anything else, you can still take the referrals. You can still write option A, B, or C. And then to Liz's point, the clearer you get around the storytelling and the messaging and the education on the other side of that process, you can feed it back to them. And then ultimately it shows up in your websites and your kind of marketing collateral. David, what about you? As you think about this,
I thought it was fantastic. It reminded me of, a decision we made a couple of years ago when we were looking at growing the practice. You know, rather than trying to do so much external stuff, bringing in new clients, we put all the focus on our current clients and deliverables and, kind of building it from the inside out. And, the same thing here, like there's so much topics about referrals, about how to ask for them and so forth. But, I just think about how short-sighted I've been, with the referrals that I've been receiving. It's been ad hoc because I haven't had a system. And, having a system, a process for it, a checklist, I think we're going to attach checklist maybe next to each appointment, just put it as a Word document to kind of help us, create a system. And so I think it's amazing. And I think, and I loved your point about acknowledging, even if they didn't become a client, kind of training the source, it puts things in a little bit better perspective. So I thought it was great. I loved it. It was great. Thank you.
I'm glad it was helpful. One of the biggest mistakes that I see advisors make in this, especially around the thank you and the acknowledgement, especially around the gift, is I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, well, if they become a client, I'll send them a thank you gift. But if they don't, I won't. I'm like, oh, I can't save you from yourself. You're missing the point. The point is to acknowledge the trust, not the outcome of the transaction. Because if they believe that you're a good advisor and you're trying to do good things and you've acted reasonably and you do these things, they'll trust you enough to try it again, or there'll be a much higher probability that you get that opportunity compared to the alternative. And so you're right. It's that we get busy. It's why I built it, because I had so many clients that were like, well, I'm into, as soon as we get the client, we go into work in the business mode and servicing. And those extras become, negotiable. And really, to your point, they're not, in the sense that we're letting money just walk away. There are people that we could be helping that we're not. And for those of you that get a lot of referrals, there's never been a better time. Referrals, I keep talking about how the demand for advice is so high right now and it's on the rise. So this is the time. If you want to jump ahead, right? Carl's got four or six hours of like his really cool referral stuff. We've got our referral stuff. it's about the COIs and those clients, like how do you activate the referral momentum and get the flywheel spinning, if you will. But as you get referrals, David, you'll see, like people will say, what changed? What's different? Oh, and it's funny. I'm like, really? You can't tell? There are five things I've done. I've sent you a gift and I've made a phone call. Like, do you really have to ask me what's different? But I've literally had, when we started doing it, and this was 20 years ago, 25 years, a long time ago, one of our CPAs was like, something's different. What is it? I was like, I don't know. We just want to make sure that you know what's going on. So that's the idea, is just make it as simple and systematic as possible. So the only part you have to think about is what to say in the phone call. Everything else should be really set to go. Chris, how about you, as you think about how are you, you know, implementing this now and any changes that you might want to make?
We just need to be more consistent. You went over this last year. We haven't fully implemented it. That's one of the reasons why I've brought the other two into the lifestyle stuff. It just helps tremendously them hearing it. It's much better than Chris coming back and saying, we need to do this every time we get a referral. And then we're 50-50. And I'm sure tomorrow they're going to say, you know, we could do this. And the problem is you just forget. You get busy, things happen. I need to call so-and-so, I need to follow up, and I forget. It's, and then your client comes in and says, did so-and-so ever call you? And you're like, oh, damn. I mean, they even ask you, it's like, did you never get my referral? And you're like, yeah, I did. That's embarrassing.
And so that's the thing. Your intention is good. Sometimes our execution is less than ideal because we get occupied. And when our attention is occupied, things drop. And that's why we create systems, because the system has to be greater than the resistance that you will face while trying to solve the problem. And the resistance is, I have to remember to do this every single time. If it's in the morning, I have to, like, that is a top of mind thing that you have got to keep right there. If you have that paper on the side of your desk and you don't look at it each day, and you had a meeting this morning and you go into another meeting and then you get busy, it could easily be 2 or 3 days. And it probably won't kill you. But when your proof point for referrals is starts with reliability, right? Can I just trust you to show up and do what you say you will do? Because that's all I've got to judge you on to begin with. That really matters. So again, even a thank you note or an automated email with a nicer message, right? Seeding those messages we talked about is better than nothing. And then what you'll hear me say all the time about marketing when we get to September is the best marketing is two parts, systematized and specialized. You want 70% of your systems marketing to be 70 to 80% to be systematized. We have a blog, I write 6 at once, it goes out, boom. And about 20 to 30% to be personalized. I have to show up and have the conversation with that specific CPA, right? Or with that particular podcast or something along those lines. And this is essentially doing all the cool stuff that you would do in a reliable, results-oriented relationship that is based on trust. We're just making sure you don't forget. And then we're enriching it with all the things that we know about what compels people to create these experiences again and again. So yeah, it doesn't have to be a big lift. We don't have to overcomplicate this one. I did really want to introduce the ideas to you and your teams before the growth retreat, because this is a lever that you can pull with very little effort. And if you get 1 or 2 or 3 more referrals over the course of a year, it is money well spent. And over time, it will generate literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in revenue by simply implementing the process. So I just want to note that I have 1.5 minutes left, and I am happy to answer any questions, and I'm going to end on time. It's my missive for the quarter, in case anybody wants to know.
You'll be happy to know I'm working on our fee increase.
Awesome. Great. Excellent. All right. Any other questions? Melissa, David, you guys ready to rock and roll on this? So teams are updated on the same basic content. My husband's trying to get my dog out of my office, and I have no idea why. He's fine. Everyone's used to him by now. They've gone over this content as well. So very much to your point, Chris, they'll be on the same page. And it's about just like, what can we do quick and easy to get as much of this benefit as we can? And then, as Melissa talked about, then you can circle back and enhance and improve on the storytelling and the messaging and activating it, but this is just an easy win. So with that, if you guys have any more questions about applying this, of course, feel free to reach out. If your teams have questions, let us know, but just one lever that you can pull to create a roadmap to a better quantity and quality of referrals in your practice.